Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Bring the world closer with podcasts from the BBC World Service. Unmissable stories from around the globe.
Whoa.
Search for the documentary Lives Less Ordinary and Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
You better be ready, because we're going to bring it to you.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Nick Miles, and at 14 hours GMT on the 8th of January, these are our main stories. As more American shuttle diplomacy gets underway in the Middle East, a senior Hezbollah commander has been killed in Lebanon. How likely is a wider escalation of violence now? A BBC investigation into rape and torture by the founder of one of the world's biggest Christian evangelical churches. Also in this podcast, India's Supreme Court says 11 men convicted of gang rape during anti-Muslim riots in 2002 must stay in prison. And later...
5, 4, 3, we have ignition.
A US moon mission takes off, aiming to set a lander down on the surface, the first for more than 50 years. Is Hezbollah, and by extension Lebanon, being drawn into a wider conflict with Israel? When a drone attack killed a senior Hamas leader in Beirut last week, Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of the Shia militant group Hezbollah, blamed Israel and said a response from his well-armed group was inevitably coming. Well, now a senior commander from Hezbollah has been killed in a drone attack. All this as the US Secretary of State is in the region trying, amongst other things, to prevent the Gaza conflict from spilling over into a broader war. Hugo Bashege is our correspondent in Beirut, and he told us about this latest attack.
This happened this morning, and the Israeli military said it had carried out airstrikes responding to attacks that had been launched by Hezbollah. And it seems that it didn't take very long for Hezbollah to respond, because apparently multiple rockets have been fired from Lebanon and sirens have been heard in northern Israel. And this has been the reality here since Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza started. These attacks have intensified in recent days. And obviously, it's very dangerous, because the fear here is that Lebanon could be dragged into this conflict. Israel has been warning Hezbollah against escalating the situation. It's been threatening a devastating response. And I've been covering these attacks from the very beginning, and I think Hezbollah has been calibrating its response, because it doesn't seem interested in sparking a major conflict with Israel. Here in Lebanon, there's no public support for any kind of military adventure, if you like. People still remember the devastation caused by the 2006 war between Hezbollah and Israel. There is a massive economic crisis here at the moment, so people really don't want this to become a major conflict, but miscalculation is always a risk.
Yeah, you can stumble into a broader escalation, can't you? Meanwhile, Antony Blinken is in the region. He's going to be in Tel Aviv later on today. One imagines he's going to be focusing as much on this as anything.
Exactly. We're talking about the threat and the risk of a conflict being sparked by Hezbollah's actions. But in Israel, some senior Israeli officials have been defending a larger offensive against Hezbollah to try to stop these attacks, to try to reduce the threat posed by Hezbollah, which is this powerful Iranian-backed organization, and also to allow the return of thousands of residents who've been evacuated from communities in northern Israel because of this violence. And yesterday, the Israeli military's chief of staff said that the Israeli army was ready for another war. So one of the messages from Antony Blinken is that the violence needs to be reduced to contain a regional conflict.
Hugo Bashege in Beirut. Now to an investigation by the BBC that's uncovered evidence of rape, torture and forced abortions by the founder of one of the world's biggest Christian evangelical churches. T.B. Joshua was the late founder of the Synagogue Church of All Nations in Nigeria and built an evangelical empire that drew presidents, Premier League footballers and millions of followers from across the globe. Former church insiders have gone public now for the first time, with claims of atrocities that span almost 20 years. Peter Marimi reports.
Everyone here in the stadium say, "I love Jesus."
TB Joshua was one of Africa's most famous pastors, drawing presidents, Premier League footballers, and millions of followers across the globe.
He had huge resources, huge amounts of influence, not just in Nigeria, throughout Africa, Israel, Mexico, Singapore.
TB Joshua performed televised healings, where members of his congregation claimed to have been cured of AIDS, cancer, and a range of chronic conditions.
Negative tested for HIV and HIV2.
Everybody wanted the privilege to go with, to meet this big giant.
TB Joshua's closest followers were known as disciples and lived together for years inside his compound in Nigeria.
It was a psychological prison. We all thought we were in heaven, but we were in hell, and in hell, terrible things happen.
Dozens of these insiders alleged that the pastor repeatedly assaulted, raped, and tortured women behind closed doors, with the most recent incidents in 2019.
It became so robotic. I disconnected from my body. I just became like a puppet.
Rape became like a normal, terrifying thing that you would do. It's like you are an animal being slaughtered. I was 17 years old.
He would be calling girls in one after the other. I stayed there almost 14 years. They would be in thousands.
Some women claim they were forced to have abortions inside his compound following the alleged assaults.
I had 3 abortions at a synagogue. And from speaking to other women, I'm not the only one.
Women that he rapes, he forces them into abortion. I never had a choice whether I could keep a potential child or not. People tried to speak up to expose him, but nobody would listen.
The Nigerian Senate has held...
TB Joshua died in 2021. His wife Evelyn is now leading the Synagogue Church of All Nations.
Good morning, viewers all over the world.
The BBC contacted the church with allegations in this report. They did not respond to them, but they said previous claims against TB Joshua have been unfounded. Today, the church still attracts millions of viewers to its online platforms.
Some people, they are still living in fear for their lives, in fear for the retribution that will come if they do open their mouths.
That report by Peter Marimi, and you can watch Disciples, the Cult of TB Joshua, on the BBC Africa YouTube channel, and listen to the new season of World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts. On Friday, an Alaska Airlines flight had to make a dramatic emergency landing after part of its fuselage detached mid-air. The missing part of the door section has now been found in Oregon. Jennifer Homendy, the National Transportation Board safety chair, said it had been located in the Cedar Hills suburb of the city, in the backyard of a teacher called Bob.
I'm excited to announce that we found the door plug. Thank you, Bob. Bob, I will not give you Bob's last name, but Bob contacted us with 2 photos of the door plug and said he found it in his backyard. Thank you, Bob. I will reach out to you so that I can thank you myself.
Well, for more on the story, I spoke to our transport expert, Theo Leggett, asking him how significant this discovery is for investigators.
It's absolutely vital for the investigation because it is the part that detached from the plane. Now, every 737 MAX 9 is built with 2 doors that are situated between the wings and the rear of the aircraft. But these doors are only in use if the aircraft is configured to have the maximum number of seats. Under those circumstances, you need 2 extra emergency exits in order to meet safety regulations. In the case of the Alaska Airlines plane, there were fewer seats, therefore these emergency exits weren't needed. So they were basically fitted with a door that was non-functional. That's what they mean when they refer to a door plug. And then the interior trim is placed over it so the passengers don't even know it's there. The problem with this aircraft is that for some reason, that door became detached. Speculation surrounds the manufacture of that part and the way it was fitted, whether there was a problem there, because this was a very new aircraft. But one way or another, it came off the plane in flight. It was very lucky it came off at a relatively low altitude and when passengers were still strapped into their seats. If it had come off higher up, it could have been much more serious. So finding that door, being able to examine it, will be absolutely key to working out what happened.
Now, a number of airlines have grounded that particular Boeing model. Meanwhile, we're hearing that pilots had reported pressurisation warning lights just prior to the incident. Do we know any more about that?
Well, this was a pressurisation warning light that came on this aircraft on at least three previous flights. The auto pressurisation fail light comes on when the pressure in the aircraft changes at an unacceptably fast rate. And it gives a signal to the pilot that they can either go to manual pressurisation, because normally the pressure in the aircraft is adjusted automatically, or if they're concerned, descend to a lower altitude where the risks of depressurisation are lower. Now, when a light like this comes on, it doesn't automatically mean that there's a big failure going on. It can be a fault in the warning system. But this was something that we know was also already under investigation. And the plane had, in fact, been placed on restricted duties, not allowed to fly over water, for example, while it was being investigated.
Theo Leggett. And now to Florida in the US.
5, 4, 3. We have ignition.
And that is the moment the Vulcan rocket lifted off from Cape Canaveral, marking the first US moon landing attempt in more than half a century. The so-called Peregrine mission is set to land on the moon on the 23rd of February and will seek to gather data about the lunar surface ahead of planned future human missions. Our science correspondent Jonathan Amos told us more about the project.
Well, it's an important day on many fronts. The rocket that took this lander into space and put it on a path towards the moon is a brand new all-American rocket, the Vulcan, operated by United Launch Alliance. You may not have heard of them, but they've been responsible for many national security mission launches, spy satellites, military telecommunications, but also NASA missions in the past. The rovers on Mars were launched by this company, and so this is their first go with their new rocket. So very important that it worked out of the box, and it did. And so now we have this Peregrine lander heading towards the moon. It has NASA instruments on it, but it is not a NASA mission. It has been contracted by NASA. So the company that owns the lander, that built the lander, that will operate the lander, Astrobotic of Pittsburgh, they're in charge. NASA has, as I say, contracted them, purchased payload space, and they are being carried. NASA is being carried to the moon.
So we've left the Apollo era 50 years ago. We're entering the Peregrine era, are we? And this is potentially going to be the forerunner for manned missions to the moon in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is this program called Artemis, which NASA now has. You remember Apollo, Artemis, it's all your mythology, where they get these names from, isn't it? So Artemis is the astronaut program that they have. But they want to establish a permanent presence on the moon. The last Apollo missions, I think the last one, Apollo 17, that soft landed, was there for 3 days. Then they came home. The idea is that we go and we stay. And if you do that, then obviously you will need T-shirts, toothbrushes, toothpaste, and all that kind of stuff. And it will be robotic missions by private companies that will sell that transportation, that logistics service to NASA.
And you mentioned in an online article you're writing, this is just the first of a number of planned landings on the moon, a stampede of landings, yeah, you've called it, this year, yeah, not just by NASA.
No, we've got Japan. It's going to attempt landing in the next few weeks. We've also got China, which is going to try and retrieve rocks from the far side of the moon. India, obviously, touched down last year at the South Pole. I mean, it gets more and more exciting at the moon. It's the place to be.
Jonathan Amos. Coming up in this podcast, Hollywood's awards season kicks off.
Live from the Beverly Hilton in Beverly Hills, California, it's the 81st Golden Globes.
We hear about the big winners of the night.
A web of manipulation and terrifying abuse.
If he'd have said to do anything, I would have done it.
With a powerful religious figure at its centre.
There was no safe place.
You don't say no to him.
World of Secrets from the BBC World Service is back with a brand new season, investigating allegations surrounding the preacher, T.B. Joshua.
The culture of secrecy needs to be broken.
Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
India's top court has cancelled an order that allowed for the early release of 11 men who were convicted of the gang rape of a pregnant woman. The incident happened during the 2002 anti-Muslim riots in Gujarat state. Our South Asia correspondent, Yogita Limai, gave me the reaction to the court's decision.
So we've heard from the lawyer for Ms. Bilkis Bano, who has said that this is a huge victory. This is a victory for women. You know, this move had prompted outrage in the country because not only were these men prematurely released, they've been in jail for gang raping Bilkis Bano, but also on charges of murder. 14 of Ms. Bano's family members were murdered during this attack. And after they were released, they almost got a hero's welcome. There were family members who gave them sweets, who touched their feet, almost as a mark of respect. These men were part of a Hindu mob that attacked Ms. Bano, who's a Muslim woman, and her family during the religious riots in Gujarat in 2002. So there had been shock. Ms. Bano had said she had felt completely numb. She'd felt completely let down and had lost faith in justice, and the justice system in India. We are yet to hear from her. We do know that in the village where she resides, family members are saying that they're extremely relieved, that they are celebrating at this outcome, but we are yet to hear from Ms. Bano herself.
And Yogita, the fact that, as you said, that these people, when their release was announced, which has now been overturned, but the fact that when it was announced that they were going to get a hero's welcome suggests that this is very much an unhealed wound within Indian society.
And many would say it's a wound that's becoming deeper and deeper. We have seen a much deeper religious polarization in India. You know, the government of Gujarat is run by the BJP party, which is also the one that runs the federal government. It's Prime Minister Narendra Modi's BJP party. He was actually the chief minister in Gujarat during the religious violence and was accused of not doing enough to protect the lives of Muslims. More than 1,000 people were killed during that violence, most of them from the Muslim community.
That was Yogita Limai. In the United States, congressional leaders have reached a deal over the total amount of federal spending for the rest of 2024 as they seek to avoid a partial government shutdown. The $1.6 trillion figure includes almost $900 billion for defence and greater protection from cuts to benefits and health, a provision demanded by Democrats. The agreement now needs to be approved by both houses of Congress. So, how significant is this negotiation? Our reporter, Will Vernon, is in the US.
I think the deal is significant. There was a lot of nervousness here in Washington over that looming spending deadline of the 19th of January. That is the date when part of the government funding that was agreed last year in Congress is due to run out. And the hope is that this deal will form the basis for an agreement to avert that shutdown. In a statement, President Biden welcomed the news of this deal, saying it moved the country one step closer to preventing a needless government shutdown. And I think that's key, this phrase he used, one step closer, meaning we're not quite there yet. Remember that Congress is now more polarized than it's been for many, many years, and reaching any kind of bipartisan agreement now is incredibly difficult. So I think it will be seen as an achievement for sure, but the spending arrangement is not home and dry yet. This is what's called a top-line agreement. So there's $886 billion for defence and $704 billion for non-defence spending. But that means that congressional leaders have basically decided the numbers, the kind of top-line, the big numbers. But details still have to be kind of hammered out and legislation still needs to be passed to get this through, to get this over the line.
Will Vernon. Now, to a remarkable story of endurance, a survivor of the Holocaust who started a band and tours the world calling for peace. Saul Dreyer was born in Poland in 1925 and was a normal, ordinary child until the Nazis arrived. After years spent in the Jewish ghettos, then surviving concentration camps, he was liberated by the US Army at the end of the Second World War. Now, 98 years old, he travels the world with his band, delivering a message of peace. Davina Gupta spoke to Saul Dreyer and started by asking him how he survived the Holocaust.
I survived the Holocaust in three concentration camps. When I started when I was 16, I finished when I was 19 and a half. I was in Krakow, Płaszów, the city where I was born. From then, I went to Schindler's factory, but I didn't work in Schindler's factory. I was in a factory next to it, but we were in the same concentration camp. From there, they liquidated everything, and Schindler took his people separate, and we went to Mauthausen, Austria. I was in Mauthausen several weeks until they gave me a detail, sent me to a concentration camp in Linz. I was working in a factory as a welder. And in Linz, I was liberated by the American army.
And Oskar Schindler was, of course, the German businessman who employed Jews. And at that time, you learned to play drums and music helped you survive.
No. At that time, I learned only how to play the spoons with a beat. I learned the drums after the war when I went to Italy in a displaced person camp. We had a English commander who was running the camp, and he brought a piano with a set of drums. They had right away volunteers for the piano. I volunteered to play the drums, and I learned how to play the drums in Italy till I came to the United States. In the United States, I never touched the drums until I was 89 years old.
Could I take you back to the concentration camp when you were there? How did music help you then?
Every night we came from work, we didn't have no food, and we were very tired. So we had a singer who used to sing in Jewish synagogue, and he started to singing, and the prisoners helped him to sing, and I had two spoons, and I saw that something is missing. So I was laying on my bed and started, I was clapping the spoon like that. And I'm going to show it to you right now. You see two spoons I put together. Ya la 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 la.
That is really beautiful. And later in life, you picked up music. Tell us about it. And you started playing drums for a cause.
Yes, ma'am. I started playing drums when I came to the United States. I didn't touch the drum for 60-some years, where eventually a woman, she was 100-some years old, passed away. And she was a pianist, and she survived. Theresienstadt, a propaganda concentration camp also in Czechoslovakia. And I felt very bad about it. There were 350 million people in the United States. I came with the idea to put together a Holocaust survivor band. And I woke up my wife. I told her, she told me I'm crazy. I went to my clergy. I tell him the same story. He told me, well, I'm crazy. But the following morning, I took a check, went and back. I bought a set of drums. Today I play the drums, and we opened a foundation under my name, Self Generation Foundation, and we're doing very well because we want to play for peace in the world.
Holocaust survivor Saul Dreyer. In Los Angeles, Christopher Nolan's blockbuster biopic Oppenheimer dominated the Golden Globes, winning 5 awards. Barbie was expected to win the top prizes in the musical and comedy category, but in the end, it won the inaugural Box Office Achievement Award after grossing $1.4 billion worldwide. The BBC's Emma Vardy was at the Golden Globes and sent this report.
Live from the Beverly Hilton in Beverly Hills, California, it's the 81st Golden Globes.
Awards are an important part of the film and television economy, and there was a sense that many in Hollywood were keen to get back to the business of promoting their work. It was the first major awards after months of actors and writers' strikes saw productions halted and red carpet events cancelled. But now the colour was back, and with her signature pink adorning the red carpet, the Barbie influence was clear to see.
And the Golden Globe goes to Barbie.
That's me.
The film won the new Golden Globes category, Box Office Achievement, celebrating productions that were a big hit at the cinema.
Thank you. We would like to dedicate this to every single person on the planet
who dressed up and went to the greatest place on earth, the movie theatres.
But the night really belonged to Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer!
This three-hour epic about the American physicist who developed the atomic bomb was released on the same day as Barbie, but couldn't have been more different. It won 5 Golden Globes, including Best Picture, Best Director, and there was a mistimed kiss for Oppenheimer star Cillian Murphy as he accepted Best Actor in a Drama.
Oh, boy. Our first question, do I have lipstick all over my nose? I'm just going to leave it.
In the TV categories, the big winners were Beef, The Bear and Succession, with acting wins for Sarah Snook, Kieran Culkin and Matthew McFadden.
I just adored every second playing the weird and wonderful human grease stain that is Tom Wamsgans.
There was an emotional speech by Lily Gladstone, picking up Best Actress for Killers of the Flower Moon, the first Native American actress to win a Golden Globe.
This is for every little res kid, every little urban kid, every little Native kid out there who has a dream, who is seeing themselves represented and our stories told by ourselves in our own words, with tremendous allies and tremendous trust from with and from each other. So thank you all so much.
The red carpet is a melee of activity. There's fans screaming, trying to get the stars' attention, journalists lined up trying to get interviews, and all the while these mini bottles of champagne being handed out to get people in the mood to party. It's all got a feel-good factor about it, and that's quite different to just a few months back when there was an actors and writers strike on, quite a lot of animosity.
Hollywood is back!
With the rather more formal Oscars approaching in 2 months' time, critics will be looking to see if Oppenheimer will be toasting the same success.
Emma Vardy there. Now, it isn't often you consider yourself fortunate to have a mouse meddling in your shed. But for Rodney Holbrook in Wales in the UK, the rodent is a welcome guest. Over the weekend, a video went viral on social media of a mouse cleaning up Rodney's shed. The former postman has even named it the Welsh Tidy Mouse. Sarah Montague asked how he first discovered his little helper.
Well, the first sign was in the box I got, where I got some peanuts in for feeding the birds outside in the garden. I went in one morning, early October, and the nuts that was in there was gone. And I thought, well, I haven't taken the nuts. So the next morning, I put more in and it was gone again. So I thought, there's something strange going on here. So I put the nuts back in. And the next morning, I had bits and pieces put on top of the nuts. I thought, I got to set a night camera up here. So I set it up on a tripod in my shed. And lo and behold, there's the videos I got.
What seems phenomenal about it is, well, how many pieces this mouse is picking up and putting in.
Yeah.
Well, it's what it like. It looks like almost like a dish. Did you deliberately put more things out for it to tidy up?
I added a couple of things, but not much, really, because I want it to be as natural as possible.
But it goes to quite a lot of effort to pick things up, and it does look like it's tidying.
It does. That's why I call it Tidy Mouse. But you're going to ask me why I reckon it does it?
Of course I am. Why do you reckon?
I think it's just covering the nuts up to hide them away from any other mouse that might venture past. Okay. This is my nuts. You're not having them. So it's hiding them. And the other thing I could think he's doing is just enjoying himself, having a bit of fun every night. But I can't imagine that.
We've got to be clear what size. I mean, we're talking a very small mouse. How big are the things it's picking up?
There was one. It picked up a long, I must have had a stick of some sort on there, out there. You see it on the video, I think. It's a long stick, which is about 6 times the length of it.
I just wonder, given you've got this mouse to do the clearing up after you, has it stopped you tidying up?
Yeah.
Rodney Holbrook there. And you can see a video of the mouse allegedly tidying up on our BBC News website. And that is all from us for now, but there will be a new edition of the Global News Podcast later on. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. You can also find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Global News Pod. This edition was mixed by Matt Hewitt, and the producer was Tracy Gordon. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Nick Miles, and until next time, goodbye.